Jack moved quickly, settling her on the mattress as he rose above her.
"I did better at holding still than I thought I would," he said.
And he was clearly done with that. His mouth met hers in a kiss that wasn't gentle or patient, but made of sheer demand. Caroline answered with a few demands of her own, and it was both heaven and torture the way he touched her. His hands were quick and sure, a touch here, a touch there, but no one place long enough to satisfy her. "Jack," she said between kisses, "please." And with him, asking wasn't a form of debasement, as it felt with Bremerton. She was Jack's equal. That made the asking a gift.
"Please what?"
She shook her head. "Please, I don't know, please everything." He moved a little away, leaning on one elbow while he stroked her hair. She kept one hand on his arm, not wanting to lose contact with him. He looked down at her for a moment, then said,
"It won't be everything, sweetheart, but I'll make it memorable."
Really, despite her earlier bold words, what he offered was as far as her ability to flout convention would allow her to go.
"Yes."
He folded back the fabric and kissed her at the top of the valley between her breasts. He worked his way lower. She let her eyes slip closed so she could just feel. As the ship rolled and Jack worked his magic on her, time and the outside world went away. If she and Jack failed at losing Bremerton, if this was all she was to ever have with Jack, it would almost be enough. Caroline drew Jack's mouth to hers and kissed him.
"I believe I want a small wedding, and I'd like it very soon."
He framed her head with his hands and kissed her again before saying,
"I don't recall proposing, Miss Maxwell."
"You will," she said with complete certainty, "because otherwise, how am I ever going to learn you by touch?"
20 minutes later, Caroline left Jack's room. Even if she felt completely different, she'd taken the time to be sure she looked the same as she had earlier in the night. The hallway was quiet, and her gait only a little crooked as the ship pushed its way through the last of the rough weather. She stopped at her mother's double doors and listened. All was still. Caroline moved on. 2 more doors, and she would be safe. Then Amelia's door swung open. Caroline jumped, and Amelia yelped.
"What are you doing?"
Amelia asked, her eyes wide.
"I was checking on Mama," Caroline replied. "How is she?"
"I don't know. I put my ear to the door, and it was silent inside. I decided not to bother her." Amelia gave her a very superior smile.
"Maybe just like you, Mama's out sneaking around in her night clothes."
"What do you mean?"
"I went to visit you earlier, and your room was empty."
"I've been in the library." It seemed a safe lie, since Amelia would never voluntarily enter that room.
"In your night clothes? No one saw me.
They might, however, see both of us if we stand here chatting much longer." Amelia was a smaller version of the white, ruffled confection Caroline knew she looked like.
"Then come in," her sister said. "I'm lonely, and there's no one to talk to around here."
Caroline glanced longingly at her door, so close, yet so far.
"Just for a few minutes," she said.
Amelia's room was an homage to the color pink in its many riotous shades. Caroline found it unsettling, but it was her sister's favorite hue.
"So what would you like to talk about?"
Caroline asked, as she seated herself in a pale pink armchair embroidered with bright pink daisies.
"It doesn't matter what," Amelia replied.
She hopped up on the edge of her canopied bed.
"I'm just tired of being the invisible Maxwell on this trip. Mama dotes on you, Helen is off in her own world, and you ignore me."
Apparently Amelia was in a mood.
"Why don't you pick the topic?" Caroline suggested. "Fine. Have you ever been in love?"
That was what she got for not driving the conversation, Caroline thought.
"When I was 5, I loved my first pony, Henry." "I'm not talking about ponies," Amelia said. "We're well past that age. I mean with a gentleman. Are you in love with Lord Bremerton?"
"No," Caroline replied.
"Why not? He's handsome and polite, and he dotes on you, too."
"I'm not in love with him for countless reasons, but I'll start with the most important. He and I don't suit."
Amelia looked at her suspiciously.
I saw you at the ball and at Harriet Vandermeulen's picnic. It looked as though you got along very well.
What one sees of a couple in public isn't necessarily what it's like when they're alone, Caroline said. When it's just the two of us, the ease and politeness are gone. I'm a business transaction to him.
Maybe that's because he knows you don't love him.
Caroline sought a diplomatic way to explain this to her sister.
Lord Bremerton and I are just different sorts of people, Amelia. It's like the color pink. It's perfect for you, but not for me.
Amelia considered the matter for a moment and then said,
I think Jack Culhane is your color pink. He suits you. You two laugh at each other's quips. You smile when he walks into a room, and you follow him with your eyes when he leaves. He is your pink.
If those are the standards for pink, I suppose you could say that, Caroline said. She would have said Jack was her whole rainbow if it would have removed the cross look from Amelia's face.
That doesn't seem fair to Lord Bremerton. You're his color pink, and I think you're Jack's, too. I'm just tired of you hogging up all the pink. You can't be two men's pink. It's not fair. Something should be done about this. Soon you'll be every man's pink, and there will be none left for me, and it's my favorite color.
Caroline rose. I'm going to bed. There's nothing I can say to you tonight that will make you happy. Sleep, and we'll talk later. Amelia glared at her. One thing was certain, Caroline would not wear the color pink tomorrow. Friday's breakfast started out decently. The seas had calmed, and though Caroline was the only Maxwell eating, at least the others weren't looking too green. Jack was working his way through his eggs and sausage. Captain says we are to make harbor just after noon, Agnes Maxwell said. The storm slowed us only a little. We'll be in plenty of time to catch the afternoon train to the city.
Good. I can't wait to get off this ship, Amelia said while using her fork to chase a melon cube around her otherwise barren plate.
Agnes disregarded Amelia and focused on her eldest daughter.
Caroline, if Lord Bremerton's father is in relatively good health, I expect there will be invitations awaiting you. You are to accept them all.
Of course, Caroline said. Jack willed her to look across the table. He wanted to send her some silent reassurance, but she kept her eyes downcast. Amelia dropped her fork with a clatter.
Amelia, that was unnecessary, her mother said. Where are your manners?
Where are Caroline's manners, Mama? Amelia replied.
Jack set down his fork, quietly. The best eggs in the world wouldn't be worth witnessing sibling warfare. He placed his napkin on the table and ready to make his escape.
See? She's doing it right now, Amelia cried.
Doing what? Agnes asked.
How can you miss it, Mama? She follows every move Jack makes. She hangs on his every word. She is a perfectly nice man in love with her, but Jack is her pink.
Jack froze. Either he was losing his mind or Amelia was speaking in tongues.
Amelia, what are you talking about? Agnes asked.
Caroline is in love with Jack, Mama. She told me so last night.
Caroline's face turned white. I said nothing of the sort. Amelia stood.
You did. You know you did. You said Jack was your color pink.
Jack pushed back from the table.
If you'll excuse me, he said at the same time Helen was rising.
Both of you stay, Mrs. Maxwell commanded.
Caroline, what is this nonsense Amelia is talking?
I visited with Amelia in her room last night, Caroline said in a level voice. She was feeling ill and a little cross. We talked. She asked me if I loved Lord Bremerton, and I said I did not, and then she lost her temper.
I did not lose my temper.
Amelia would have been more credible if she weren't shouting now, Jack thought. He kept his mouth shut, though.
Mama, we were talking about love, Amelia said. I love the color pink, and Caroline loves Jack. That was the conversation, and I have no reason to lie, she added with a glare in Caroline's direction.
Agnes Maxwell gave Jack a baleful look.
You may leave the room now, Mr. Culhane.
Jack rose.
Thank you.
He had a feeling those were to be the last words he'd be permitted to say to a female Maxwell for some time to come.
Chapter 19.
Jack knew there were far worse fates than being exiled to the Savoy Hotel.
On Tuesday afternoon, though, he couldn't think of a single one. While Caroline was no doubt fending off Bremerton at some luncheon or another, Da and he sat glumly at the hotel's bar. They were among the few patrons there since it was a freakishly sunny London day. Most everyone else was outside on the hotel terrace or walking in the gardens alongside the River Thames.
"I'll bet you've never been outsmarted by a 16-year-old," Jack said to his father. "You'd be losing that bet. I raised you, and I'm guaranteeing that you got away with plenty that I don't know about." "Point taken," Jack said, before taking another swallow of what was probably the worst lager he'd ever tasted in his life. Then again, that could have just been his poor attitude working its way to his taste buds.
"Care to tell me what happened?" Da asked. "You've been stewing for days."
He'd actually done some brewery work, too, but mostly Da was right, and the days felt more like an eternity.
"All I know is that I stood accused and was convicted of being Caroline's color pink."
"Pink? What does that mean?"
"Apparently that she loves me."
"Then why did she just not say it?"
Da asked, but then gave a dismissive wave of his hand.
"Never mind, I know the answer. The Maxwells are a mad lot. Mad as a pack of rabid dogs."
Breakfast last Friday had not been the most sane thing Jack had ever seen.
"So does the girl love you?"
Da asked.
"Yes, but that's not relevant at the moment."
Jack's father looked at him as though he'd just said Ireland wasn't the center of the solar system.
"Not relevant. It damn well is relevant any time a woman will unbend enough to admit she loves you. Try saying it and then having your words handed back to you on a platter along with your own head." "It wasn't a good crossing, I take it," Jack said.
His father had been doing his share of silent stewing, too. Da snorted.
"Between Flora cutting me off cold the first night and me playing cards with a thieving English lord who wouldn't honor his debts, there's been none worse."
Jack had a very uncomfortable thought.
"Tell me it wasn't Bremerton."
Da nodded.
"It was. Flora chose the Lucania because it was the only ship with a Saturday departure, and damned if the Englishman wasn't in first class, too." "There had to be several hundred people in first class, and you befriended him?"
"Intentionally," his father said. "I'm going to have my eye on any British git who's after harming my son."
He made a low sound of anger as he pushed his empty whiskey glass toward the inner lip of the polished mahogany bar.
"Damn British bastard."
Realizing the bartender was right there, he added,
"Not you, of course."
The bartender nodded and pulled out a bottle of Da's favorite, Jameson. When he went to fill the glass, Da instructed him to leave the bottle.
"Did you tell Bremerton who you were?" Jack asked.
"Just my first name, but it wouldn't have mattered if I did. To him, I was just another uncivilized paddy. The name went in one ear, then out the other."
Da took a sip of his whiskey.
"I set him up well, too. I let him win long enough that my money was in his pocket, but 2 days later, when I started winning, all he offered me was a marker for the debt. The man couldn't hold his liquor, either. He was all puff and noise about the heiress he's about to marry. That would be your Maxwell girl, wouldn't it?"
"In theory, yes," Jack said.
"You'd best be making sure it doesn't happen in practice," Da replied. "He said how this time he was doing it right. No manipulation or backtalk allowed."
Jack knew Caroline would not manipulate unless cornered, but that was little solace, considering Bremerton got a thrill by trapping. And as for the backtalk, that, unfortunately, was Caroline's stock in trade on a good day. But the words, "this time," sat worst of all. Jack was sure he'd never heard Caroline mention that Bremerton had been married before. And as concern jolted through him, he was equally sure that he was done feeling sorry for himself. The hell with being exiled by Agnes Maxwell and sitting in a great pool of self-pity with Da. He had things to do.
"I have to leave," he said to his father. "Will you be okay here?"
"I made it this far on my own," he said. "I'm sure I'll make it fine a few hours more."
For Caroline, the very best thing about being in London wasn't the fine architecture, the accents, or the sophistication of the city. It was knowing that she would never be seated by Bremerton at a social function. As a lord and grandson of a duke, he was a distant face at the well-titled end of the table. Caroline sat with her kind, American heiresses, and other such foreign riffraff. Today's large luncheon was hosted by Lady Reynolds, whom Caroline had never met before. Lady Reynolds's silver hair stuck out from her head at all angles, and she had a fondness for white face powder. If Caroline hadn't been feeling marginally charitable, she would have compared her hostess to a plaster death mask. She'd certainly given Caroline a cold, dead stare today. She'd announced that she had known Bremerton since he'd been a child, and certainly hoped Caroline recognized the honor of being escorted by him. Luckily, life among the riffraff was proving far warmer. "How was Newport?" asked Marjorie Smith, a fellow heiress whose mother had brought her from New York a year ago and refused to let her come home until she was wed. "I miss it so."
"It was as lovely as ever," Caroline said. "I hope to be back there soon."
Marjorie looked at her speculatively, or perhaps she was just squinting. Marjorie's mother insisted she did not need spectacles. Marjorie's unfortunate habit of striking up conversations with potted palms suggested otherwise.
"But all the talk is about an impending engagement between you and Lord Bremerton."
"The talk is very premature," Caroline said. "We're just getting to know each other. Had you met him before today? If you can share any stories, I'd be curious to hear them."
"I'm afraid I don't have anything to tell," Marjorie said with a shake of her blonde head. "He is quite handsome. I'm sure I'd recall meeting him if I had."
"And here I was certain that you knew everybody," Caroline said. "I wonder how Bremerton never came onto the scene."
"It is quite remarkable," Marjorie replied as she took another look up the long table. "My mother and her friends make sure I have all the proper introductions. Maybe he's considered improper. Wouldn't that be dark and romantic?"
Caroline answered with a bland smile. If being bullied and subtly threatened was part and parcel of dark and romantic, she could do without it. Just then, Bremerton leaned forward and looked down the table at her. Caroline pretended interest in her overcooked squab.
"Excuse me, Miss Maxwell?"
Caroline looked over her shoulder to see a footman in the Reynolds's forest green livery.
"Yes?" "There is a messenger waiting for you in the front hall. It is of some urgency."
"Thank you," Caroline said. "I'll be right there."
She hoped it wasn't Mama. This morning, Caroline had tried to talk to her calmly about Jack and what Amelia had said. Mama had taken to her bed complaining of chest pains, and Berta had sent for the doctor. After seeing Mama, the doctor had delivered a strong warning to Caroline to be sure that nobody overexcited her mother.
"If you'll excuse me," she said to her nearest fellow diners before following the servant.
She could feel Bremerton's gaze hard on her as she left the room, but she didn't look his way. Her shoes tapped a quick rhythm across the glossy oak of the hallway floor. She slowed, though, when she came to the black and white marble entryway. There stood Jack. He smiled. She smiled back. Enormously. Caroline thanked the footman, who retreated to the far end of the hall.
"How did you know I was here?" she asked Jack in a low voice.
"I had O'Toole slip over to your townhouse and get your weekly schedule from Annie."
"Excellent job."
"Thank you. I plan to work hard to live up to the honor of being your pink," he replied with a teasing smile.
She winced.
"I'm sorry. That was completely mortifying. You caught us at our worst."
"That was nothing," Jack said. "Wait until you catch my father when he's in a mood."
He glanced toward the footman.
"Can you make your excuses and leave? We need to talk."
"I'll be right back."
Caroline returned to the dining room and apologized to Lady Reynolds, saying that she was needed at home. Bremerton offered to escort her, but Caroline quickly told him that her mother had sent a carriage. His response was cordial enough, but suspicion was obvious in his pale eyes. There would be repercussions for this escape, but she'd gladly pay the price. In no time at all, she was outside with Jack. He ushered her into a waiting hansom cab, slid open the trap door in the cab's roof, and gave their driver a Mayfair address. Jack and she sat close together on the cab's single seat. No one on the street could see when Jack held her hand. His warmth worked its way up her arm and to her heart.
"Where are we going?" she asked as they pulled away from the curb and into the traffic.
"Not far. We're going to have a visit with Flora," Jack said.
"Flora is here?"
"Yes. She and my father both crossed on the Lucania. It seems we're too interesting of a show not to follow."
Caroline smiled.
I'm glad they're here.
I'm glad Flora is, but the jury's still out on Da,
Jack said. He flashed a quick smile that spoke of his love for his father.
I've been picking up some news on Bremerton and want to see if Flora might be able to help us.
I'm assuming the news isn't all sunshine and joy, Caroline said.
Jack gave her hand a reassuring squeeze.
It's nothing we can't handle.
She decided that in this case, she was fine with delaying the inevitable and didn't press for more. Her time was better spent simply holding Jack's hand and enjoying the sunny day. Just a few minutes later, they pulled off the busy main thoroughfare and onto a quieter, elegant residential street. The cab stopped in front of a red brick townhouse that wasn't the largest, but was immaculately kept. Jack handed their fare up to the driver, who then opened the cab's doors. Jack exited, helped Caroline down, and then up the steps to the townhouse's main entrance. A black-suited butler opened the door, and soon they were on their way to Flora. She rose as they entered the room and approached them, arms extended, in a cloud of ivory taffeta and violet perfume.
Caroline, how wonderful to see you.
Caroline embraced her friend. And you?
Flora turned her attention to Jack.
You're looking well, Jack. How's your father?
Holding up the bar at the Savoy right now, I believe.
She smiled. He'll be done with that by sundown and over here to give me a piece of his mind. She looked at Caroline.
Jack's father proposed marriage while we were aboard ship. Some nonsense about having the captain perform a ceremony so we could get it over with. It was the most unromantic proposal I've ever received, and I have received my share.
I'm sure he's seeing the error of his ways by now, Caroline replied.
He's long overdue, Flora said. But enough about Patrick. Welcome to my home, and please have a seat.
Once they were settled, Jack in a jewel-blue armchair, and Caroline and Flora in a pair of matching floral ones, Jack spoke.
So was Da the only one to cross paths with Bremerton on the way here, or did you, too?
He asked Flora.
I saw your father with a gentleman who I was told was Bremerton, but I kept my distance. I had no idea what Patrick was up to, and I preferred to keep it that way.
A wise choice, Jack said to Flora.
To Caroline, he said,
During the crossing, my father took it upon himself to try to wring some money and information from Bremerton. He got a gambling note that Bremerton will never pay up on, and one odd statement that we need to pay some attention to. Has Bremerton ever mentioned being married before?
No, never, Caroline replied. He's not exactly generous with personal information. The one time I tried to ask him anything, he scared me off the conversation.
Scared you how? Jack asked.
It doesn't really matter, she said. Now that he's broken Eddie's leg, we know to take him seriously. She considered how to find what they needed. If he were married, it would have to be in Debrett's. The copy I was working from in Newport was outdated, but he hadn't been wed as of 1890. I don't suppose you have a more current copy here, Flora.
I won't allow that odious book through the door.
Caroline laughed. I call that a prudent policy.
Do I want to know what Debrett's is?
Jack asked. No, the women replied in unison. I'll have my governess Peake follow up on this, Caroline said to Flora. I'm sure she has a fresh copy already.
Also, if he was married, someone in that part of society would have to know about it, Flora said. I'll do some asking through my friends. While you're at it, see if you can find out anything about his life in West Sussex. Rumor has it that his house is being stripped of valuables, Jack said.
Caroline looked his way. Your father certainly didn't get that from him.
No, Peake provided the local gossip, Jack said. We know Bremerton's a gambler since he bid on Da's nightly card game, but that doesn't mean that's where his money is going. The more details we can gather, the better.
Well, for a man with an ill father, he's very social, Caroline said. In the day he was here before me, he managed to make a 2-inch-thick stack of invitations appear at my house. I'm sure I'll learn more as I attend all these functions.
Jack looked at Caroline.
I need you to be careful when you deal with him. His exact words to my father were that he planned to do marriage correctly this time. He wasn't going to tolerate manipulation or backtalk.
Flora looked at Caroline and shook her head.
Oh my, he has picked the wrong woman, hasn't he?
An hour and a half later, after some real lunch and more talk with Jack and Flora,
Caroline returned to the Grosvenor Square house. Amelia was lurking in the front hallway.
"Where have you been?" she asked.
Though it was evidence of a character flaw, Caroline hadn't yet fully forgiven her sister for last Friday's drama.
"At last count, I didn't have to report to you."
Amelia stopped Caroline as she tried to walk past.
"You have good reason to be upset with me, but you have to trust me when I tell you that you don't want to go upstairs. Mama is beside herself."
"What this time?" Caroline asked. She didn't want to be insensitive about her mother's health, but she suspected that the woman was going to outlive them all.
"Lord Bremerton is in the parlor. Helen is currently entertaining him. I ran out of things to say, and he's saying as little as possible."
Caroline blew out a sigh. She'd been expecting to pay for escaping Lady Reynolds's, but not on the same day. She thanked her sister, stood taller, and went to face the Englishman.
"I'm relieved to see that you're well," Bremerton said as soon as she'd walked in the parlor door. "Your family has been alarmed."
"I'm fine," she said to him, and then told Helen she was free to leave.
"If you're sure?" Helen asked.
Caroline nodded, and Helen departed, but not without a few looks over her shoulder. She also left the parlor door open. Caroline appreciated the thought. She went to stand in front of the sofa upon which Bremerton sat. She'd noted that he hadn't risen when she'd entered the room. That, she supposed, was to express his extreme vexation. He had forgotten that she did not particularly care whether he was vexed.
"I'm surprised to find you here, Lord Bremerton," she said.
"Not half as surprised as I to find that you were not."
He delivered the words in a silkily smooth voice that made her pulse jump more than if he'd expressed anger.
"I had some personal matters that I needed to attend to," she replied.
"Yes, I saw the Irishman with you outside Lady Reynolds's. I'd say they were some very personal matters indeed."
Caroline worked to keep a calm demeanor.
"We aren't engaged. There's no understanding between us at all. I am free to see my friends and conduct my relationships as I see fit."
He rose.
"Let's not make a mistake regarding where we stand, Caroline. I have spoken to your father and obtained his consent to a marriage. All I have yet to do is propose to you."
Before she could even draw a breath to respond, his hand snaked out and wrapped around her wrist. She refused to give weight to his behavior by fighting back, so she let her arm go limp.
"I would ask if he took you to his suite at the Savoy, except I know he did not,"
Bremerton said in a perfectly calm voice.
"You visited with a Mrs. Flora Willoughby, I'm told."
"You're having me followed?"
"I'm merely looking out for your safety as you visit your future homeland."
"Your consideration is unnecessary," she said.
"But it's quite necessary."
He pulled her closer. She thought he was about to kiss her, but he did not. Instead, he brought his mouth to her ear and said in a low voice,
"I would be most upset to find you were no longer a virgin."
Her breath caught in her throat as he pushed her away. She just regained her balance when he said,
"I look forward to seeing you at the museum gala tonight."
He tilted his head and assessed her from head to toes.
"Wear diamonds, Caroline."
"I could set my watch by you, Patrick Culhane," Flora said to herself that evening as she watched for Soames, her butler, to show Patrick into the front parlor. It was not quite 5, and Patrick had apparently simmered as long as he could. He entered the room, hat in hand, but with anything but a contrite look on his face.
"I know I went about things wrong on the ship, Flora, but refusing to talk to me at all is like sending a man to the gallows for trespassing."
"Good evening to you too, Mr. Culhane. May I offer you any refreshments?" He tossed his hat onto an oak side table and said,
"No, thank you, but you may offer me a second chance."
Flora smiled in spite of herself. Patrick grinned.
"I take it that was polite enough for you."
"It was better than telling me to get ready for a ceremony in front of the ship's captain because we're growing older and have no time to waste. You, I must point out, are growing older faster than I. The clock isn't winding down on me." He laughed.
"Cruel woman."
"Only when it's deserved," she replied, but softened the words with a smile.
"I've come to ask you to accompany me to dinner on Saturday night at the Savoy's River Restaurant," Patrick said.
"You can't possibly have a reservation for this Saturday," Flora replied.
With Chef Escoffier's fame, it takes months to obtain a table. He smiled.
Would I be lying about something that will prove itself come Saturday?
No, she admitted grudgingly.
So will you or won't you?
I will, Flora said. After all, who could pass up Escoffier? Patrick grinned.
I know my strengths, and cooking's not among them. But there are things I do well you might be remembering.
He walked to her, took her hand, and kissed it.
I'm sure if you do some thinking between now and Saturday, you'll remember what one of them is.
With that, he was gone. Flora stood where he'd left her, remembering every single last thing that Patrick Culhane did to perfection. Chapter 20 Caroline had worn diamonds on Tuesday night, rubies on Wednesday, pearls on Thursday, and sapphires on Friday. She had danced when told to dance, spoken only on command, and shared no opinion that differed from Bremerton's. Yet according to the Englishman, she was still falling short of what he expected of his future wife. Peake had said that the men in Bremerton's family outlived their women. Caroline was certain this was because they drowned them in demands. But she came from hardy American stock, and she fully intended to have a future that would not include being told what to wear every day of the week. Saturday evening had arrived, and Annie was in Caroline's bedroom, helping her into a pale green Worth ball gown with iridescent beading that would complement tonight's demanded emeralds. While Annie worked, Caroline shared information to pass on to Jack through O'Toole, who had become their conduit.
"Also tell him that Bremerton's late wife could have been French," Caroline said. "He told someone last night that he'd been touring the French countryside when his brother passed away, and that word didn't get to him in time for him to attend the funeral."
She looked over her shoulder at Annie.
"The man has an excuse for everything."
"Except for the way he treats you," Annie said as she gave the dress one last tug.
A few threads snapped somewhere in the layers of fabric Caroline wore, but the gown sat smoothly when it had refused to cooperate before. Annie came around to face Caroline. The maid stood, hands on hips, and surveyed her.
"Perfect, of course," she said. "I wish I did poor work. I hate having a hand in this night after night dressing you up for that man. I feel like I'm fattening you for the kill."
Caroline smiled. "That's not the most flattering comparison, but it's apt enough. I promise you, though, that I have matters under control." And that was true, so long as she did exactly what Bremerton wished and did not risk seeing Jack. "Miss Caroline," Berta said from the bedroom doorway, "Lord Bremerton awaits you downstairs."
"Thank you, Berta," she said. "I'll be down in just a moment."
Mama's maid left. Annie hurried to the dressing table and retrieved the emeralds.
"I don't know how you can be so calm, miss. You know he's doing this on purpose. Yesterday he was 15 minutes early, and today 20.
"He's doing it to get me to react. Therefore, I won't," Caroline said as she looked in the standing mirror and used two jeweled hairpins to place the dress's small matching feather aigrette into her hair.
"Oh, you'll react one day. You're just storing it up."
Annie smiled. "You're not the sort who's destined for sainthood."
Caroline laughed.
"Definitely not. I'm planning on developing a headache just around midnight, so expect me home not long after."
"I'll be here waiting to hear how another night with the devil went."
The devil was in the parlor, dressed to perfection in his cutaway tailcoat.
"You are timely."
"I try to oblige," she replied.
"I would like a moment to speak with you before we leave," Bremerton said.
He gestured at a small chair Mama had had upholstered in a Chinese tapestry.
"Sit."
Caroline's dress, with its voluminous skirts, was not made for comfortable sitting. Once she had herself adequately perched, Bremerton moved in front of her. He stood less than a foot away, which forced her to crane her neck in order not to be staring at parts of him with which she'd prefer to remain unacquainted.
"Is there something in particular you wish to speak to me about, Lord Bremerton?"
"I want you to call me Marcus."
"If you wish."
Caroline clasped her hands together in her lap. She'd begun to shake. She knew what was coming next.
"You've had a week now to meet those whom you would be seeing in my social milieu," he said. "You have performed adequately."
He seemed to be waiting for her to say something. She gave him a cheery smile.
"Thank you.
Maybe you should give me a treat, as my mother does her lapdog.
He disregarded her comment.
At this point, I see no reason in delaying my request for your hand in marriage.
Again he stood silent. Caroline watched him.
Well, what is your answer? He finally asked.
I don't recall being asked a question, she said, as she sorted through the possible ways she might be able to escape or delay him.
His expression went from disaffected to annoyed.
If it soothes you to be asked in the form of a question, Miss Caroline Maxwell, will you do me the honor of marrying me?
She wanted to give him a blunt and irrevocable no. That, however, would only serve to inflame warfare among her parents and herself. Even her father, who was an indulgent man, would not tolerate outright rebellion. She drew in a breath and stepped onto the narrowest tightrope she had ever tried to tread.
I recognize the great honor you've bestowed upon me, but I would hope you understand that I can't give my consent at this moment. The marriage of a daughter is a joyous thing, and yet my father is an ocean away. I'd like to have him here.
Your father has already consented.
True, she replied, wishing the Englishman would move far enough away that she could stand. Her neck was beginning to seize up. However, that was all business. I'm speaking of the emotional aspects. I want to see my father's eyes when he knows I am to wed.
And if it was to Bremerton, she wanted Papa to grasp the level of sacrifice she was making.
I would also point out that I haven't yet seen where you live, Lord Bremerton.
Marcus, he said in an icy tone.
Yes, well, I would think that if a woman is to marry, she should have some sense of what her lifetime surroundings are to be, and what she can do to create a place of comfort for her husband. You've said that all I need to do is ask, and you'll give me the world. I don't ask for the world, but I do request these two small things.
He stared down at her for what must have been at least a minute. His hands clenched and unclenched a few times. Caroline knew he wouldn't dare to strike her in her own home, but she stiffened just the same.
I expect your father to be here in under a fortnight, he said, and if you wish to see Chesley House, you shall see it.
She exhaled a breath she hadn't even known she'd been holding.
Thank you.
He looked down at her for a moment longer, a muscle at the side of his jaw working.
I will make your excuses to the Felke Hugheses this evening. I'm quite sure you must be overwrought.
If he thought missing a ball was punishment, he knew nothing about her. Caroline nodded, and Bremerton turned and walked from the room. Once he was gone, she remained in the little Chinese chair and considered her options. Like the verbal tightrope she'd just treaded, they were stretching thin. Caroline looked up as someone entered the parlor. It was Mama, and she wore a dinner dress instead of her recent shut-in garb. Her mother started when she noticed her.
What are you still doing here? Mama asked, her hand to her chest.
Lord Bremerton was worried about my health and told me to stay in tonight.
Her mother came closer.
Are you ill?
No. I had just asked him to defer his marriage proposal. He believed that I had to be ill.
He offered, and you declined?
No, Mama, Caroline said in a calming tone. As I just said, I deferred.
This is dreadful.
No, it's reasonable. I want Papa here, and I want to have seen Bremerton's house.
Caroline estimated those two events would buy her another 3 weeks.
That's not so very much to ask.
Her mother seemed to calm herself as she paced in front of the fireplace.
Well, we'll do what we can to speed this along. Your father should be here by Monday, Mama said. He's crossing on the Vandermeulen's yacht with them. I had asked him to leave the Conqueror at my disposal for a speedy return to New York to complete wedding plans. Should you be a decent enough daughter to let that come to pass?
She began breathing quickly, but getting no air in.
You, however, have not. How could you do this?
Her mother's calm had been very short-lived. Caroline didn't want to think how Mama would have taken it if she'd said no. She rose and reached out a hand in a conciliatory gesture.
Please relax. There's no crisis.
Except Papa arriving early, she thought. Her mother held a hand to her chest.
There is a crisis. Any well-bred young woman would have accepted. I'm sure he's off looking at other potential wives tonight.
Mama clearly underestimated the lure of the Maxwell millions, but pointing that out would do little to help.
Please, you really do need to breathe, Mama.
I can't.
Do you want me to call for your doctor?
No. I wish you to stay out of my sight unless you're coming to tell me that you've accepted Lord Bremerton. Now please leave me.
Yes, Mama, Caroline said. She kept her head high all the way to her bedroom, where she cried. How could Mama not see Lord Bremerton for what he really was? Jack sat at the bar in a smoky pub some distance from the Savoy. Talk and laughter bounced off the building's low, beamed ceiling. The air was thick, and the ale the richest Jack had ever tasted. Da was taking Flora out to some fancy dinner tonight, and had even gone so far as to have a new tuxedo made. Jack was good with his unremarkable clothes and a platter of roasted beef and boiled potatoes, at least as good as he could get knowing that Caroline was with Bremerton yet again. The Englishman had been efficient in ensuring that Jack couldn't secure invitations to any of the events he'd been taking Caroline to. Jack had asked Flora to try through her friends, and he had reached out to some college acquaintances who now lived in London, but he'd come up dry. He had, however, caught some unsavory tales about Bremerton. Rumor had it that his lordship owed a great deal of money to a man one didn't want to cross. The only reason he still lived was that he was a duke's direct heir. The potential of eventual repayment beat the nuisance factor of killing him. The noise level in the pub suddenly dropped. Jack looked toward the door. Bremerton had entered. His evening clothes made him as obvious as a peacock in a flock of sparrows. He slowly scanned the crowded tables. Jack turned back to his food. The Englishman could afford to work to find him. Bremerton soon elbowed his way between Jack and the man seated to his right, who looked damned unhappy with the intrusion. Jack kept eating.
"This would be your sort of place," Bremerton said. "Best ale I've ever had," Jack replied. "Want me to buy you one?" "You're not in the least curious why I'm here, are you?"
Jack speared another bite of potato and shrugged.
"All we have in common is Caroline, and as to why I'm not surprised to see you, why should I be? I know you're having me followed."
He inclined his head toward a scarecrow of a man with a pockmarked face and tweed cap. He'd been sitting by himself and nursing the same ale for some time.
"Your man isn't very subtle." "But he comes cheaply, and he's not averse to violence," Bremerton said.
Jack heard the threat. He just didn't care.
"In his line of work, he'd better not be. So what do you want?" "I want to make it clear what the consequences are if you do not leave England immediately." "And those would be?"
Jack asked, after making Bremerton wait while he ate a bite of beef.
"Fatal."
Jack laughed.
"Unlikely, unless you hire better than that,"
he said, hitching his thumb toward Bremerton's puny hired muscle.
"And we both know you're flat out of money."
"Were you drinking something or just taking up my space?"
the bartender demanded of Bremerton, who ignored him.
"I don't mean fatal for you," Bremerton said to Jack.
He gave Bremerton a brawler's grin.
"We both know you're not touching Caroline until you're married. But Flora Willoughby is expendable."
Now Jack was angry.
"I'm beginning to lose my patience with you."
The bartender smacked his palm on the bar.
"Oi! Order, or get your overdressed arse onto the street."
Jack wanted that arse to land another place. He stood and knotted his left hand into Bremerton's cravat and sunk his right into his gut. The Englishman's knees buckled. He staggered into Jack's neighbor as Jack threw some money on the bar.
"He can finish mine," Jack said,
and then left the pub. Flora loved formal restaurant dinners. She knew the order of cutlery for 12 courses and could handle escargot tongs without a slip. She reveled in Epicurean delights and felt that fine French burgundies were nectar of the gods. Tonight, though, as she sat in the Savoy's River restaurant with Patrick, she might as well have been gnawing on squirrel and swilling grape juice. Flora was inexplicably nervous, and Patrick, who generally did not do well in places as opulent as this, remained completely calm. She had never seen him looking more handsome, either. His tuxedo was so well cut that she wanted to remove the bow tie and loosen a few buttons on it, just to relax him, of course, and not because she happened to be craving his closeness. She'd been over 2 weeks without even a kiss,
and she was far hungrier for that than she was the filet de poule aux truffes sitting on her plate.
Patrick took a sip of his wine and looked at her evenly.
Is the food not pleasing you?
It is, she said, very much. He smiled.
I'd be believing you more if you'd take a bite.
Oh, of course, she said. Flora cut an infinitesimally small piece of the chicken and nibbled on it. The sauce is heavenly, she said once she'd finished. He smiled.
There wasn't enough on that fork for a hummingbird to taste.
The waiter came to remove the course, and Patrick asked him to delay bringing the next one. Flora imagined the chef would be heaving a cleaver if they waited too long, but she was glad for the break. Too much was coming at her too quickly, but from the determined look Patrick now wore, it wasn't going to stop.
When I last saw you, I told you to think about what I do well, Patrick said once the waiter had left. And instead of asking what you thought about, I'll tell you what I know I do well.
He leaned closer.
I'm an incredible lover.
A playful smile tugged at the corners of his mouth. But you already know that, and I won't bore you by pointing out the obvious. Flora said a silent word of thanks for all the years she'd been on stage. She kept her expression the same as if he'd been talking about the weather.
And I'm a good provider, he said. I'm not afraid of hard work, and don't plan to stop until I'm in my grave. I'll be slowing a bit now, as it's time to turn to other pleasures. But I'm guessing that your wealth outstrips mine anyway, not that I want a penny of it.
He paused and smiled.
And I know I'm a good da. You just have to look at Jack to know that. Should you want a child, I'd be honored to be his or her father.
The words made her want to weep, but then she'd miss the rest.
And now, here's what I've done poorly with you, Flora. And I swear, I never will again.
He hesitated, and she knew how difficult he'd always found it to admit fault.
My Maeve was a fine woman, he said. I loved her with all my heart. And when she died, I thought I could never love another. But then I met you. And though Maeve had been gone a long, long time, I felt guilty for loving you. And scared by how much I did, too. I pushed you away when I should have been holding you close. I was a fool.
Flora gave up and used her napkin to dab at her eyes.
And then after that, I was a liar when I told you in Newport all I wanted was your friendship. I want it all. I want your cries when I'm loving you. I want your temper when I've crossed you. I want you now and tomorrow and every day of my life.
He nodded.
There now. I've almost said it.
She smiled over her tears. I can't believe there's anything else to say.
There is. I was in Egypt to try to rush you on the ship. Whatever wedding you want, we'll have. In London, New York, or Newport, it's yours. So will you marry me, Flora Willoughby?
Tully, she said. Patrick looked at her blankly.
What? Aye.
I want to get married in Tully. No fuss and no frippery.
A slow smile worked its way across his handsome face.
You're meaning this. Tully, County Donegal.
Yes, I am. He tipped back his head and laughed.
You're going to keep me guessing, aren't you, my love?
Flora smiled. For as long as we both shall live. Well past midnight, Jack sat in his father's suite waiting for Da to arrive. A fire burned in the small grate, cutting through the dampness rising off the River Thames. Jack knew he should be feeling more tired than he was, but anger sustained him. Da came in, untying his white bow tie as he walked. He smiled when he saw Jack.
Congratulate me, son. I am going to be a husband again.
Jack rose and shook his father's hand. Da pulled him into a hug and patted his back, as though Jack was the one who'd done something monumental. His father stepped away. His nose was red at the tip, and his eyes looked suspiciously watery. He cleared his throat twice before speaking.
It's a grand night, he said.
and that was the most important bargaining I've done in years.
He paused and laughed.
Hell, bargaining. I gave it all away, and I'm glad I did.
Jack smiled, though he had a tough time making it reach his eyes.
So is the bride, Flora? Of course it's Flora,
Dob blustered. Who else might I be after marrying? Jack went to the cut crystal carafe that waited on the room sideboard. He poured Daw a glass of what had to be Jameson's finest. He poured a splash for himself into a tumbler, too.
I know, he said, handing his father a glass. After all, who else would have you?
They toasted each other.
Who else indeed, Daw said.
His father had a swallow of whiskey and watched him keenly.
Do you want to tell me what happened, or am I to guess?
Jack resettled onto the red and gold striped settee.
Bremerton paid me a visit tonight while I was having my dinner and ale at the Boar's Head pub.
I can understand how a man like that might put you off your beer, but if he was with you, at least he wasn't squiring about Caroline.
True, Jack said, but he was making threats.
Da sat next to Jack.
Well, I know they weren't against you because you wouldn't be caring. What did he say? He threatened Flora.
Daw's jaw twitched as he digested what Jack had said.
He knows how to hurt you then, doesn't he? He chose the best available target, Jack agreed.
Could you get Flora away from England?
I know the Culhanes stand and fight, and once you're gone, I'll do that for both of us.
Daw let out a long, weary sigh.
I'll have gone as soon as I can persuade Flora to pack.
He gave a tick of a smile.
It seems we're getting married in Tully. Clearly she hasn't seen the village church. I'd wanted you there, and Flora will be expecting it.
Jack nodded.
Get her off this island, then tell her we'll celebrate together in New York.
Da nodded.
I'll book passage Monday morning. Thank you.
So, Da said, after they'd both stared a while into the meager flames, their minds clearly elsewhere.
What are you going to do about the Englishman?
First, I'm going to Bernard Maxwell and asking to marry Caroline. I found out tonight through O'Toole that Maxwell is to be here by Monday, Jack said. Maybe he'll shock the hell out of me and say yes.
If he had the sense of a donkey, he would, Da said. But I'm thinking the Maxwells and Sense parted ways a long time ago, excepting Caroline, of course, he added.
Of course.
Da shook his head.
Who'd have thought I'd marry again?
Jack smiled.
Me, now that you and your Sense have joined up again. I'm happy for you, Da.
He nodded.
And soon I'll be for you.
Jack would make it so. Chapter 21. Caroline's father arrived at the Grosvenor Square house on a very rainy Monday afternoon. Jack, who sat out front in a hired cab, decided it would improve his chances if he at least let Mr. Maxwell dry off before he made his call. He impatiently lingered another 15 minutes or so, and then rang the bell. The butler, as stoic as O'Brien back in New York, disregarded the fact that Jack was damn wet as he ushered him to the parlor. Bernard soon joined him.
Good afternoon, sir,
Jack said to Caroline's father as they shook hands.
Thank you for seeing me so soon after your arrival.
The older man looked weary. Likely worn down from travel with the Vandermeulens, the family never stopped talking.
I was wondering how long you planned to lurk outside, Bernard said. I saw you when I was coming in. You do know that Edward didn't make the crossing with me.
Yes, sir,
Jack said.
I'm here to speak to you.
Well, speak then, he said genially.
There was no point in delay.
I'm here to ask for your daughter's hand in marriage, sir.
Mr. Maxwell stared at him as though he'd just announced his intention to sink the Conqueror.
You wish to marry my daughter?
Yes, Caroline, Jack added, to be perfectly clear.
But I just spent days listening to talk about how you're about to propose to Harriet Vandermeulen.
It was just that, sir, talk. It will be cleared up now that the Vandermeulens have arrived. I love your daughter.
You always struck me as a sensible type, Bernard said. You accompanied Caroline over here, son. You know the trip was made to settle marriage matters with Lord Bremerton.
I know that was your wife's intent and possibly yours. I came to keep her safe from Bremerton.
What do you mean, safe?
He isn't who he pretends to be, Jack said. I've heard talk that concerns me.
Caroline's father shook his head.
You can't be about to hand me the same tale as Edward did about Bremerton trying to injure someone on the polo field. I checked with the match umpire and a dozen other witnesses. The field was wet. Accidents happen.
They do, but that wasn't one. He was trying to hurt me.
You? Why would he even notice you?
He had reason, Jack said.
Admitting to Bernard Maxwell that he'd been kissing his daughter wasn't going to win Jack a bride. Mr. Maxwell's congeniality was wearing thin, and his bushy brows were coming close to meeting above his nose.
Whatever issue you have with the Englishman has nothing to do with Caroline. She's at no risk.
I believe she is. I'm asking you to wait before you send her to visit Bremerton. Please listen to what I've heard and see if you can prove or disprove it. I've been working to get to the people who can help me do the same, but it's been difficult. They're not interested in opening their doors to an American they've never heard of before.
You can save yourself the effort. Caroline and her mother already left for West Sussex on the morning train, Mr. Maxwell said.
Which had to be why O'Toole hadn't been able to get to Annie last night or early this morning, Jack thought.
That makes it all the more urgent to find out the truth about Bremerton, he said aloud.
You're at best a friend of my family. Caroline's marriage arrangements are none of your business.
They couldn't be more my business, sir. Your daughter loves me, too. We could marry without your consent, but she also loves you and your wife and wants to please you. I respect that.
Caroline told me about the husband list Mrs. Maxwell wrote. I'm asking you to put it aside and consider Caroline's future.
Give us your blessing, and don't put your daughter in a position where to make you happy, she has to sacrifice her own happiness.
I'm going to be blunt about this because I don't want you harboring hope. Look at Caroline's family, and then look at yours. We've been at the pinnacle of American society longer than your family has been in America. You're a fine friend for my son, but you're not of the stature to marry a Maxwell.